All right, everyone, welcome to episode 3 of ContraCast. We just discovered minutes ago that I am indeed a person and can gargle my soda just like other normal people. Tonight, because Steven is out doing things and John is here, but...
Currently working on his car.
He's a noob who chickened out of this podcast for this episode. It is just me and Mike Pawlowski. So once again, I'll go ahead and give a quick rundown of how you can get in touch with me, and then I'll let Mike do the same for him. You can follow my blog, which has my musings of the day on it, at contrapol.blogspot.com. You can follow me on Twitter, my little updates on twitter.com/contrapol, and on Facebook at facebook.com/quietkowski. I'll have links to all this on my blog. Mike, how about you?
You can follow me on Facebook, /M Pawlowski, and you can follow me on Twitter at, I just recently changed it from Yomacheta to Mike Pawlowski, and Paul should post that on his blog.
I will indeed. If you haven't picked up on it yet, tonight we're not recording over Skype, we're actually recording out on my deck through one microphone, so the quality may be better, may be worse, but I don't know, it works. Tonight we're going to talk about a number of topics. The first is going to be the Wii game, The Conduit, that just came out a few days ago. Mike and I rented that tonight and had a chance to play about 2 hours worth, and then we kind of wanted to stop. So this is just going to be our first impression. We have not finished the game or anything. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a little rundown of video game graphics and how I at least have hypothesized that modern games, and I mean like the last 4 and 5 years, haven't really changed as far as graphic design or graphics go, and even though they have, they kind of all, it doesn't matter anymore. We're going to talk about the Pirate Bay selling to a Swedish game company, and we're going to talk about torrenting in general. We're going to tack on a little bit more about the Zune HD and how we plan to use that device, and then a little section on augmented reality, and we'll tell you what that is when we get there. So, first things first, we're going to talk about The Conduit. Mike, give us your first impressions.
First impression of The Conduit, for the Wii, obviously the graphics were, you know, the usual Wii graphics. I didn't expect anything great. The gameplay looked kind of... It looked good. I haven't played it that much. We'll probably give you another rundown later on as I begin to play it for my 5-day rental for $7, which I don't think was worth it. The Conduit, well, it kind of felt like Red Steel to me in the pointing, as far as pointing and shooting. Like, you think it would be easy just pointing the Wii at the sensor bar and moving it around, but it's really sensitive. And I find it better if you just sit down and, you know, kind of lean it up against your arm and then point it at the screen.
That was a firefight!
And we're back.
I have to cut that out.
I know.
Anyway, so after that interruption, I was talking about The Conduit and how it's hard to aim. And but once, like, I played Red Steel. If you played Red Steel ever, it's hard to get used to. But once you get used to it, it's pretty easy. I liked how you start off with the shotgun, but the gameplay seemed kind of like, I don't know. Like, it seemed like a conspiracy theorist's, like, dream, because it, I don't know, it seems like something from the government of the United States. I don't know, it feels like something from National Treasure. A bunch of the symbols look the same, and so, I don't know. But as far as, like, the aiming and shooting, it was fairly difficult, and I kind of got the hang of it, and Paul seemed to have some trouble. with it. I'll let him talk about that.
My first impressions were not great of the game. It's been touted as really its biggest feature. It has been its incredible graphics. And the thing is that, I mean, people have said that it looks as good as an Xbox 360 or PS3 game. It doesn't look as good as some of my favorite original Xbox shooters. I mean, Half-Life 2, Halo 2, Black, a handful of others look far superior. And you could, those could pass as maybe a modern game. I mean, even Far Cry Instincts does. But the graphics, I mean, they're not... If they're going to try and sell the game based off of that, really, they really didn't push the envelope quite as much as I was thinking they would. As far as controls go, Mike has played Red Steel a lot. He had it. It was one of his first games for Wii. I only barely touched that, and I've only done a few shooters on Wii. And so for me, it was difficult, to say the least. One of my biggest qualms with the Wii is how when you control other shooters, you control basically where you're looking directly with the mouse. Or your right thumbstick, and when you move that, you move the reticle, which is in the middle of the screen, and you look around the screen, and the rest of the camera moves with you. The Wii, you move the reticle all over the screen, and it's really kind of confusing if you're not used to that. I would much rather it just be locked in the middle, and I move the whole camera instead of having to kind of swivel it around and push the reticle on the edges. I mean, for being a shooter, it feels very unshooter-like. Essentially, is what I'm saying. You had to, I don't know, there's a whole lot of control options and everything, but the problem with it is that you have to use them a lot. When you play other games, you know, like Call of Duty 4, Halo 3, you maybe tinker with the settings, like, for sensitivity for, like, a minute, and you're done, you're ready, you're done for the whole game, you know? The Conduit was just, like, every 5 minutes we're trying a new setting to make sure, to see if we could make it run a little better, you know, and easier to control. As far as just the storyline, I'll just hit this real quick. It kind of felt generic to me. Guns felt generic. Shooting felt generic. I think people are making a big deal because it's on the Wii, but I think if it was on the 360, it would just be like kind of tossed in the bargain bin pretty fast.
Yeah. Another thing about it was that I'd like to say is like the targeting. If you ever played Zelda and you use Z for targeting, but when you play Zelda and you target an enemy, it centers it, and you start strafing immediately for combat. On the Conduit, when you target someone, all it does is just show you where they are on the screen and make it a little easier to shoot, but it doesn't, like, lock on to them. I'm not expecting it to lock on the cursor, but I'm just expecting it to put them in the center of the screen and move for me, like strafed for me, while I can shoot at them, rather than trying to move with the reticle and shoot at the same time, because it feels like you're trying to move with the aimer and shoot with the aimer. That's my main problem with the game.
Okay, so we've kind of covered that. It's just our first impressions. We haven't finished it, but we really weren't too impressed with it in the beginning. We're going to move along now to one of the two main topics for today, and this one is going to be video game graphics through the ages. And I can't really come up with one sentence to describe what we want to talk about, but I want to talk about how in the last 4 and 5 years, even though things have evolved, it doesn't matter anymore. And what I'm going to talk about is we're looking at this link. On webdesignerdepot.com. I'm going to post it on my blog in the show notes. And we're looking down at just how graphics and design evolved over the years from 1990 to 2008. Even though 2008 is last year, there's nothing earth-shattering so far in 2009, so whatever. And if you look down this list, what you notice is some major evolutions and changes in how things look. I mean, you go from, you know, like the first, or you go from like Civilization 1 and Super Mario World and stuff, and you go down and all of a sudden you hit Mortal Kombat, and you hit the first 3D shooter, Wolfenstein 3D, or the first big one. You hit SimCity 2000 and Doom. And things really evolve fast. I mean, you hit your first 3D games that are real popular, and your first really big RTS games and everything. And looking down, it's just like a whirlwind of evolution all the way up until now. But the thing is, when you hit about 2004 and 2005, it doesn't matter as much to me, or I assume to other people as well. If you look at the games, like even starting it as early as Halo and a little later, if you start at about 2004, you start hitting games like Doom 3 and World of Warcraft, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, and Far Cry, and Half-Life 2, and Halo 2, that still look great today, and they play great today, and they look good, and it doesn't matter as much as it used to. I mean, it used to kind of cash in things for the newest and biggest games, the newest graphics or whatever, and then, you know, you start hitting these things that don't really look any better. I mean, you got Fear 1 here from 2005, September 2005. I mean, we just talked about The Conduit. Fear 1, I would say, beats The Conduit any day in graphics, and it's it's 4 years older. I mean, it's, you know... and so, we just kind of want to make the point and you know, talk about how graphics don't matter so much anymore. You're kind of expected to have good graphics, and if you don't, well then... it's not such a big deal because everything looks decent enough. You want to say anything about this before we get a little deeper into it, Mike?
I think that's probably what the Wii's makers were thinking when they made the Wii, was they made it so that there wasn't really a graphics card, and I guess that cut down on the cheapness, but they know that people stopped caring about graphics, you know, around this time and this day and age. I know the Wii could have a little bit better graphics, and they should have at least given it 360 graphics, which would make the Wii sell better. But on a different note, as far as the games, as far as graphics go, I don't really care as much how good the graphics are anymore, as long as they look decent, and the gameplay is what I really care about.
If you look, you know, if you look back at some games that you used to love, and I'm looking specifically at GoldenEye and StarCraft, I remember GoldenEye was just incredible when we used to play it. It was like nothing we'd ever played. And you know, I know some people played Perfect Dark instead, but we played GoldenEye, and GoldenEye was just like awesome because we'd never really played a shooter. We never played Doom on the computer, and so in like '97, when we were playing GoldenEye, it was just like, you know, mind-blowing. I mean, you're running around, and you're like, wow, there's a gun in front of me, I'm shooting other people, like, because you're not, I mean, you know, you play single-player, but we play multiplayer more.
It's kind of like the Halo of, you know, the early 90s.
Yeah, it was the big shooter for a while, and so we play that all the time, and you go back and you play that, and then StarCraft is the same kind of thing. You play StarCraft, and StarCraft was amazing back when it came out. You go back and you play those in the past few years, and it's just like, I can't even do it. I've grown accustomed to a new standard and a new look of game design, and so when you go back and you try to play things like GoldenEye, and you just like can't see other people, and you know, we're not going to really talk about the controls, but those don't work. It's just, you know, it's very strange, and those games don't age well. But then when you look at what's come out, you know, even 5 years ago, I mean, yeah, sure, Doom 3 maybe looks a little dated, but Doom 3 is 5 years old, and it's still very much playable, and it still looks good, you know. World of Warcraft is almost 5 years old, and it still looks good and plays good. You know, Far Cry is still a graphical masterpiece, even though it's ancient as well. And Half-Life 2, I mean, I just replayed through Half-Life 2, it's still... not even talking about design and innovation and everything, it still is one of the best-looking games I've ever played, and I'm comparing it against modern stuff. I mean, very modern standards. And I want to talk about another thing, is graphics not mattering to people? And what I want to emphasize is that the current benchmark for graphic design is Crysis. And this game came out in October 2007, and it's still the most power-hungry and best-looking game on the market. And this is really the only game that is like this, looking down this entire list. Every other thing, like 2 years down the line, there's something, you know, that much better. You look at 2005 on here, and you got Call of Duty 2, and then you look at 2007, and you're like, wow, Call of Duty 4 looks way better. Crysis, you know, there's nothing after it that looks any better. There's stuff that looks worse. But you know, it still hasn't. No one's hit the crisis mark. But no one seems to be trying anymore. What do you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's really trying to hit the crisis mark because I think they believe that crisis has really overexceeded the boundaries as far as computing power to play it. But that could be one of the main reasons why no one's trying to make graphically better games, or just because of the fact that the 360 can only go up to, and console games can only go up to a certain graphic standard.
I'm looking down at some of the games coming out this year, and like this year we're gonna, or not, well maybe not even this year, but the next couple years. I'm looking at a screenshot from StarCraft 2 and one from Diablo 3. In particular, those are both Blizzard games, and the thing you notice in these pictures is they're not mind-blowing as far as graphics go. I mean, they look good, but I would never call them an evolution over even something like, or not even really over Dawn of War from 2004 and 2005. But they get the job done, and so that's what I'm trying to think about is have we reached a point where people don't care anymore? Because even if you look at the late life of the Xbox, the original Xbox, you still have quite a bit of evolution. You know, I mean, some of the best games on that are from 2004, but then even towards the very end, you're coming up with games that that just make everything before them look really dumb and look old and silly. But at the point we're at now, I mean, the fact that some games like Gears of War were released so early in the Xbox's lifetime, I mean, very little has come along since then that makes it look any better. Or any worse, I mean. And so it seems like, I mean, almost, you know, I'm wondering what's going to happen when the next console chain, or next consoles come out. And are people going to jump for them like they did for the PS3 and the 360 that promised better graphics? Because even today's mediocre graphics, I mean, I looked up a review for the Wanted game, because Wanted the movie was great. It got like a solid 7, and the graphics were a 7, but you compare those graphics against other modern, like, AAA titles, you know, Metal Gear Solid 4 or Grand Theft Auto 4, and they really, I mean, they stand up quite well. It's not like it used to be, where if there's a game that gets like a 7 or a 6 for graphics, it really deserves that, and it's not anything special at all. And so I guess, you know, we haven't really concluded anything, but we just want to discuss that, and it's really just been me talking. But Mike, you have anything else you want to add?
No, not really. I think you've covered everything on that.
Okay, so we'll try not to do that anymore. I just kind of wanted to discuss that. I got thinking and wrote a blog post earlier this week on exactly how graphics have evolved and what the standards are now. We're going to move on to the second big topic of this week, and that is we're going to talk about the Pirate Bay and torrenting in general. Now, as a few of you know, perhaps, the Pirate Bay is the world's biggest torrent tracker. And to fill those of you who don't know in, a torrent tracker site is a site that you can list torrents on. And a torrent is a file that someone can download, and it's rather than being in one big chunk, like you download an iTunes song in one piece, a torrent is something that it pulls different pieces of that file from anyone who's seeding it, which means they're allowing you to take files from them. So, for instance, if I were to post a torrent of some kind of, some kind of game online, and then Mike and Steve both download it, and then someone else downloads it, and Mike and Steve are still seeding it, that person maybe takes half of the game from each one of them. Torrenting itself has become extremely popular in recent years, as people can get everything from movies and music to programs and files and other such things, and even operating systems through torrent systems. And as such, it's become quite a legal hot topic. And the Pirate Bay, the founders just recently went to trial in Sweden. And against all odds, they actually lost their trial, and they ended up selling their company to a Swedish game company. And because of this, they're going to end up basically they've shut down their site. And I don't mean it's shut down, but I mean that what it's been known for is no more. And so we both, I mean, I've used the Pirate Bay, and Mike has, and it's usually been our most trusted torrent site. I mean, it's very widely known that the Pirate Bay, you know, you use them, they never give your information out, and they're always safe. You know, you don't download as many viruses or anything. Mike, what do you think about them selling their company, and basically they're going to change their website to a more legal, perhaps, to a more legal format, and they're actually going to try and figure out some way to pay copyright holders for stuff that's downloaded.
I don't think I'll like it at all. I'm known Pirate Bay for, sure, they have illegal content on there, and I think the Pirate Bay has not really done their job as far as, like, weeding out the illegal content, but I believe that's why everyone loved it, and Pirate Bay is the one who took the stand for that, and they've lost, but I don't think the Pirate Bay is... I don't think it's going to be the same as it was. I think they're going to start dropping a ton of torrents because of legal issues and not wanting to go to court once again, even though it's owned by someone else. It's going to just be like some of the other torrent sites, torrent tracking sites. But there's other sites right now called that are torrent tracking sites, like Mininova and stuff that like that I use. I usually use torrents with a Z at the end, and that one searches many torrent tracker sites for torrents, so it'll find basically any torrent that you need to download. And so I don't think it will affect me or anyone else that much as far as torrenting, because there's always another site to replace it.
To clarify, Pirate Bay and other torrent sites, while they do have a fair share of legal content, if I want to go to one of these sites, for instance, and pick up... I mean, I just did this the other day, and it's not legal, but, you know, I went and downloaded Photoshop CS4 over one, because I need Photoshop, and I don't have $600 hanging out to pay for it. And so I got that program. That's why they come under legal heat, is they host, and when I say host, I don't mean they actually have the files. I mean that they allow people to post basically links to them, to movies and music and other copyrighted materials. So when Mike's saying illegal, he means like, you know, the movie 300's on there, the movie Wanted's on there, the movie Star Trek is already on there, you know, in a recorded from theater format. And you can go on there and you can download all this stuff. And so they came under tremendous legal heat because of this. And, you know, we'll talk about it in a minute, just why people torrent and why we torrent and stuff. But I just want to talk about them being shut down, because it's something that has not happened really to other sites. They were the biggest, and now they've really, you know, they've sold out. And I don't mean sold out like, you know, a band sells out or something, but they, the Pirate Bay as we have known it, is basically no more. Mike, I'll let you start on this. Just why do you torrent, and why do you think other people torrent?
Torrenting, I first heard about it in middle school, and I thought it was, I don't know, my friend told me about it, that it takes pieces of files from many different people, and depending on how many people there were, you would get the file faster, and I thought it was kind of dumb, but then I tried it out, and it's really nice, because torrent sites don't, like the Pirate Bay, are great, because they don't get shut down, because they're not actually hosting the content. All they're doing is giving a link to a torrent that somebody has the file stored on their PC, and once someone else downloads them, then it rapidly spreads, and when people seed it, it's taking the files from multiple computers over multiple networks, so it makes it basically impossible to track as far as illegal content, so that's why all the illegal content's on there. But for other things, it's great, especially if you're trying to download large files. Like, I usually get my anime from torrent sites because the quality can be really good, and if it's a popular anime, then people will seed it a lot, so the more seeds you get, the faster it's going to download. And I download 700 megabyte anime in like less than an hour. Some files that you would normally, you know, if you're straight downloading it from a site that's completely hosting the file, would take days to do, And that's the great thing about torrents, is because it can take multiple files from multiple computers and multiple sources at the same time. And that's why I like it, and that's why I believe other people torrent.
I go with the same kind of thing, but I think torrenting as a medium for downloading materials really took off because you can get copyrighted material on there. I mean, I know, for instance, it's hard. I mean, I'm not a person who likes to. I mean, you know, you don't sit there and think, oh, I'm stealing from you now, you know. They come down, you watch those ads in the movie theaters about how if you steal a purse, you steal a car, you steal a movie. It's not the same thing. And that's what I want to emphasize about people that download stuff. When you download something like a movie or like a program, you know, it's hard to exactly emphasize what I'm going to say. If content was perhaps cheaper or higher quality, it wouldn't be such a big deal to pay for it as much. But you know, if you're going to release a movie that is not worth $8, you know, it may be worth $2, but I'm not going to, you know, there's nowhere to watch a movie for $2. Well, then, you know, who's going to stop me from maybe watching that on an online video watching site? It's the same for a program. I mean, I dearly love Photoshop, and I don't really know what I'd do without it. But, you know, it's $600 for Photoshop, and I don't have $600, and so...
Seriously? I mean, the companies who charge that much for software, it's just ridiculous, because the only reason they charge it is they know they can charge it because it's so good of a program.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is you get businesses that need it. So, like, you got your, you know... multi-million dollar like magazine companies or whatever that need Photoshop, and they absolutely must have it for their magazine. So what are they forced to do? They have to plunk down, you know, $600 per copy for, you know, 15 people to have on their computers or more. But when I need a program like that, and the worst one for me is computer games, because it's very easy to download them, and it's very easy to get them to work. And they start out priced ridiculously high. I mean, when a game comes out for the computer that I would buy if it was $20, and they try to sell it at $50, and I know for an entire year it's going to be $50, I don't really have any motivation to buy it. You know, but I would like to play it, but it's way too expensive. And so, you know, it seems to me that if prices went down a little bit, people would buy a lot more. Because for me, I know, you know, if a real high quality game comes out and it's a expensive price, I'll buy it. But if a number of, like, you know, 7 or 8 games on a scale of 10 come out, I'm much more tempted to go and torrent them. And I think a lot of other people have the same mentality. I mean, as far as like music goes, I'm more likely to download that, and I'd love to go to like the artist's show or buy a t-shirt or something. But I don't really want to pay, you know, $13 for a CD. I've never been able to justify paying that much for music, even if it's an artist that I really like. I'd rather support them in a more visible way, like a T-shirt or a concert or something. Mike, what do you think about people? And what do you think about the state of I guess pirating in general? I mean, do you think people that download stuff, I mean, consciously are sitting there thinking, ah ha ha, I'm stealing from companies, and I am the bandit, or do you think they're just like me or other people who are just like, you know, if I had the money, I'd pay for this, or if it was a little cheaper, I'd be more tempted to buy it?
Now, I can see people who generally download illegal content. I know my brother Steven always downloads the latest music from torrent sites, and I like downloading them from music from torrent sites because it has a full album and you can get it fairly quickly versus going to, like, Frostwire and downloading just one file, and it could be a virus. But other than that, I don't think people are thinking, oh, ha ha ha, you know, I'm stealing from them. And every time I torrent something, I feel bad, but then I think about, you know, it's $13 at the store, and I know you're supporting the artist, but if you've ever seen that South Park where they illegally download music, and then, you know, the cops come and arrest the kids, and they take them to all the, like, rich rappers' mansions, and it's like, oh, he can't build his gold statue. He has to wait another week, you know, because people are illegally downloading his music. stuff like that. So, but of course I'm going to feel bad for downloading music from, you know, young artists who are just rising. So I usually, if I do download something, I'm just downloading it to sample it. And if I do like the artist enough and I know they're small and I want to support them, then I'll go out and buy it. But I don't think anyone's, you know, just sitting at home just being like, oh, you know, I'm stealing from them. It's like, and this is what I do. And there are some people who illegally download music like that and then try to sell it on eBay or something. But those are the people that are really doing it, you know, just to benefit from it.
Yeah, I think there's a certain mentality that goes around with people that share files and put stuff on Pirate Bay, that they're doing a massive favor to people. I've heard of people that sit there and at their computer and just copy like terabyte after terabyte of stuff and host it. I know of someone who just scanned books in, made them into PDFs, and then uploaded those. And so you could go online and just download books. And I think there's a certain mentality that goes along with that kind of person that just says, you know, I am part of the underground. I am supplying all sorts of people with information and materials that they might not be able to get or afford otherwise. And I know certain, I mean, I listen to one podcast called Extra Life Radio. One of the hosts of that is, he's located in Columbia, South Carolina. That's where I was born, but that's not where he lives. He lives in Columbia, South America. And he basically has to torrent his material. Because not only does stuff get to him slowly, by slowly I mean, you know, like a game comes out here and it's released there in like 8 months, or it never comes there. Stuff there is through the roof expensive. Like he has a hacked Wii that allows him to download games online and then burn them to CDs and play them on his Wii or DVDs. Wiis there in Colombia cost twice what they do here. Here they're about $250. There they're about $500 U.S. dollars.
And they're not even worth that here.
No, they're not even worth $250 here. They're, you know, $100 something maybe, but the inflation is ridiculous. And so he basically is forced to download stuff that way if he wants any kind of new content. I do want to tell a little story. I got caught last year at school actually torrenting some songs. I didn't really get any trouble. They pulled my internet for a week for a DMCA, which is a Digital Millennium Copyrights Act violation. And so it's, you know, after that I've been a little more careful. I don't really download music or any kind of material that I think, I don't know, will get me in trouble so much. You kind of just need to know what stuff is out there and being tracked. I mean, music and movies, there's the RIAA. And the MPAA are tracking those. There's nothing really. I mean, Adobe's not out there tracking for Photoshop. But yeah, I did get caught for that. Anyway, I think we're gonna go ahead and wrap up that topic. I feel like we're kind of, this episode's kind of odd, if you ask me. I think because it's just two of us, we're spending a lot more time talking about stuff, and perhaps that's good, and perhaps it's bad. I don't know. I don't know what the listening audience likes to hear us talk about. We've only done two episodes so far, and this episode seems to be a very different format than those. The future,
I think this is a kind of a chance to get, you know, the feedback from our listeners.
Yeah, no, we really, I don't know exactly how many there are. I know we have at least about 10 listeners, which is really nothing. But we have at least 10, and then I don't know, because I did, I set up streaming, which I'll do for this episode, of course. On the blog, so you can just listen to it on there. So I don't really have an accurate track of downloads like I do when I don't have that. But I would like some feedback. I mean, if you guys want to email us, or just email me or post a comment on there, my email is contrapaul@gmail.com. I've got contrapaul listed about 20 times everywhere else. So if you need help spelling it, look no further than my blog. I think we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Zune HD just a little more, and then the concept of augmented reality and exactly what that is and how we think it could be used and why we're talking about this topic. We'll be back in just a few.
Hi, it's Fitz with Slap Chop. You're gonna be in a great mood all day. You're gonna be slapping your troubles away with a slap. You're slapping your troubles. Here's a potato. One slap, you got big chunks for the stews. Two slots, one fries. And the second, and look at this. With your add a mushroom, the more you do it, the finer it gets, you'll switch any plate. Now, you ball salad, you hate makeup. You know you hate McSalad, you hate makeup. So we don't have any salad in your diet for this one slap salad. The soup, cold slaw stuff in what, 5 seconds? 4 or 5 seconds, it's done. This thing is tuna, looks boring. Stop having a boring tuna. Stop having a boring life. Add this tuna, make it like this. Now you're gonna have a nice, exciting life. Now here's a hard-boiled egg. One chunk of pickle, you add the green. And what you can do, you can mix things together. You add ham, and you're gonna love this. You don't have time to make breakfast. Breakfast to go. Watch this, you're gonna love my nuts. Watch this, you're gonna love my nuts. Watch this, you're gonna watch this. You're gonna watch this. Watch this, watch this, watch this, watch this. Fruit love fruit, fruit mango. Watch this. Watch this. Watch this. Watch this. Look at this, isn't that beautiful ice cream? The reason you're gonna slap away every day is because it's so easy to clean. One, two, and pops open my fat. Now these other ones you've seen in the stores, bacteria gets in the food, all the stores have this. You can't clean it, you can't open this up. It's worthless, forget about it. Now take the slap chop, put it back together. Put the slap chop right there, let's put the slap chop right there. Let's put the slap chop right there, let's put the slap chop right there. The skin's at the bottom, the skin's at the bottom. The skin's at the bottom, the skin's at the bottom. The skin comes right off. 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 Now put a tomato in there, add your cilantro, your hot peppers right there. You hit it like this. Hit it like this. Hit it like this. Hit it like this. Guys, we're gonna make America ski again. One slap at a time. It's guys, we're gonna make America ski again. One slap at a time. It's guys, we're once again. One slap at a time. One slap at a time. We're once again. One slap at a time. One slap at a time. We're once again. One slap at a time. One slap at a time. We're guys, we're one slap at a time. At a slap, 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 slap. I am faced with slap chop. You're gonna be in a great mood all day. You're gonna be slapping your troubles away with a slap. You're slap, slapping your troubles away with a slap chop. Lion's face with slap chop. You're gonna be in a great mood all day. You're gonna be slapping your troubles away with a slap. You're slap, slapping your troubles away with a slap chop.
Daisy, you just got one hand and chop, 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 chop.
Watch this, tacos, fettuccine, linguine, martini, bikini.
And with that, we are back. To finish out the show, we're going to talk about the Zune HD just a little more and augmented reality. I'm sure I said that right before the break, but I'm sure I put something interesting in the break to make it worth your while. So first off, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Zune HD. I think last week we kind of had, there was four of us on the show, and we kind of had like a race through the Zune HD content. We didn't really talk about a number of things, about how we're going to use it and whatnot. I know for me, I'm looking forward to using it as a mobile device. And what I mean by that is, I mean, it's got full internet, it's got multi-touch, it should have probably a rich app catalog or a user-generated content catalog. And so you'll be able to use the Zune HD for a number of, I mean, you know, looking stuff up in class or looking stuff up anywhere. I mean, you know, looking up directions on the road, looking up quick answers to stuff. I'll be able to update like Twitter and Facebook from there. Maybe even type and create blog posts. And it's even, you know, it's got a Tegra chip in it. We didn't really talk about that, but a Tegra chip is basically, it's from NVIDIA. It's basically a computer on a chip. It's got a central processing unit, or it's got a graphics processing unit, and it's got memory and stuff on it. I don't want to pause it because it's gonna do what it did last time and stop.
Just cut this part.
It's cool. All right, so. Anyway, yeah. Okay, so anyway, I was saying stuff like the menu scrolling and just video playback. It's going to be able to play 3D games, which is going to be great. It has all the features of the previous generations and of course, a whole bunch of new ones. I think one of the reasons I'm so excited about using this as a mobile device is that I don't want to pay for a phone mobile device. I don't want to pay the $30 extra a month to get a BlackBerry through Verizon. I'm not going to switch networks to AT&T to pick up the iPhone. And as great as the G1 looks, the Google phone with Android, I'm not jumping to T-Mobile anytime soon. So basically, I want a device that can handle the things that a phone claims to do without having to pay for all the extra phone junk. So this thing, while it may be, you know, $200, $250 for the lowest end one, it's worth it in the long run, because if you pay that much, it's, you know, you think about the BlackBerry plan and then the launch cost or the price of a BlackBerry, in like 3 months you've covered your cost for the Zune, and then you don't have to pay for it for the rest of the months. So basically, I'll be getting one of these. You know, I'll be holding on to my old Zune. I'm not going to plan to get rid of my brown Zune. I'm using that for music, and I'm using that for podcasts. And this new one I'll be using for video playback, because it does have a great screen and a touchscreen and everything. But as a mobile device, something that, you know, I mean, it sounds really corny, but extends my functionality beyond my computer. So Mike, what about you? What are you going to be using the new Zune for? I mean, I know you've talked about getting rid of your old Zune, but fill me in a little bit more on that.
Yeah, I thought about getting rid of my old Zune, because I have the 80 gig Zune, which is slightly smaller than yours. I mean, I've felt yours before, and I didn't want to get that, because it basically feels like a brick. And the one I have now is slightly skinnier and thinner, and it doesn't feel like a brick as much, but still, when I'm looking at a picture of the Zune HD right now, and I see how small it is, and it looks like the old iPod Video, the lengthwise one, it looks about that big, but not really, maybe just slightly bigger. But if you've ever held an iPhone, it takes up your whole hand, but this one is more widescreen, and it takes up your hand lengthwise, but not widthwise, so it just looks like something that you can have in your pocket like a phone. And what I'm hoping to use it for is I'm really hoping that it has a audio input, so that you might be able to mod it into a phone or something like that. But mostly, I'll probably get rid of my old Zune and use it for music and videos and pictures and what I normally use it for. And I believe it's going to have, like I said in the last podcast, the internet browser, which I will definitely use while I'm in class and just get on the Wi-Fi internet and zoom around the web or something and look at my Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that, social networking sites.
Yeah, I kind of just blanked. I was thinking of something that was earth-shattering, I'm sure. The audio input. Excuse me for that, that little brain fart. As far as if it has audio input, I will be very happy. I'm sure someone will create a Skype app within just a few days or months of it being out. And the thought that even though it's not, you know, a full-fledged phone, the thought that maybe I can be out, you know, just at school or wherever, and actually call people or chat with them over Skype is fantastic. You know, that's the kind of thing that actually get me to maybe pay for the Skype subscription. It's like $3 a month, and you can call phones and cell phones. And I would, you know, that'd be pretty awesome. I'd be pretty happy with that. But I think that's all we're going to talk about for the Zune HD. And we're going to move on to our last topic, which is augmented reality. And of course, augment means to add to or to make better. I'm sure I just butchered some kind of English description of that. I kind of stumbled upon this because I was looking up information about the Tegra chip that's in the Zune HD. What I want to talk about with augmented reality is this. Augmented reality, as far as we're going to be talking about it, is something like you find in video games. You've got a heads-up display in a lot of games, almost all games, that shows you perhaps, I mean, the time, how much ammo you have left. It shows you like a map. It just gives you a little information to make the game easier for you. Augmented reality is the same basic idea, but for real life. So as far as like my token description, it'd be like if I walk into Walmart and I look around, and maybe I have a certain set of glasses on that just projects little bits of information at me. And I look around and, hey, I see a big stack of Pepsis. And rather than having to walk over and see the price, it feeds information back and just like shows me a little little icon. It says, you know, those Pepsis are $2.75 for a 12-pack. And I'm just like, all right, glasses. And that's the kind of thing. I mean, maybe it shows you map detail. It shows you the speeds of cars around you. It just shows you a little information about the world that makes things perhaps easier, or maybe gives you information overload. But Mike, what do you think just about you know, augmented reality in general? I mean, does it seem like something that you think is maybe coming? I mean, I know they've released a number of different things that you know, basically are little attempts at you know, bringing that kind of functionality to modern devices. Do you think it's something that people will jump onto, or do you think it's going to be, you know, something that's just a distant thought for the number of years coming?
Augmented reality is kind of one of those sneaky things in technology that you don't really see coming, but yet it's all around you. Like, for example, a good example I've been looking up on Wikipedia of augmented reality is something that I've seen in questions for a long time is when you're watching football, how they show the first yard, first down line in yellow, and no matter what camera angle you're looking at and wherever the camera's moving, it always shows the line, and the players, when they're over it, the line doesn't cross over the players because that's a form of augmented reality.
Yeah, that's something that, I mean, it's, you know, you can watch a game of football just fine without that. I mean, if you're watching it live, it is. But to the viewers, and they've done this with other sports too. I mean, I know NASCAR, as much as I hate it, does it. They put little pinpoints on the cars and show you who's driving it or the speed that it's going at. Sports is really the first area that they're really using this system to make better and more interesting.
Another good example, which I just thought of, is I was watching baseball recently, and they've just added this. When you're watching baseball, the pitcher throws a pitch, and you can't really tell if it's a strike until the umpire calls it. Well, they have a strike zone box that's superimposed over the catcher to show you where the pitch landed and if it was in the strike zone or not. And another thing that I like about it is they also have when the first baseman guy takes a lead, they have like a little line gauging on how far his lead is and how he will be able to get back to the base if the pitcher was to throw it to first base. So yeah, I believe augmented reality does help out in things. Mostly you see it in sports now, but in the future, I could see it used for combat where maybe a soldier puts on goggles and has like a grid overlay of the battlefield that he's on, and it shows the mountains and how far he is from the mountains, and it shows like maybe a meter distance and how tall the trees are, because you can't really tell stuff like that from a distance or anything like that. Or maybe it would show like life forms around a corner, so that like it would take the soldier out of less combative territory. So versus walking into a building where they don't know people are or an enemy is, they can just look at the building, and then the augmented reality would show them that there's a life form behind this section of the building. That way they know what to expect and reduce fatality rates.
Okay, so you know, I don't know exactly if we've told you everything we want to or not. It's getting kind of noisy out here. We're recording out on my deck, of course, and it's July 4th. There's fireworks.
And a massive helicopter.
As far as I can tell, there's a gunship headed straight for Louisville. So, if you're in Louisville, and you're somehow listening to this live, I would duck. I'm going to give a quick shout out, and that always sounds dumb to me. But I noticed that our blog is, or at least my blog, is being followed by Ben Key. And I haven't seen Ben Key in several years. By several years, I mean at least 6-7 years. But he's given me a little bit of feedback on my blog and my reviews of movies. And he started a blog called Ben's Movie Blog. And so far there's just a few reviews up. But I would go check that out. I'll post a link to that on my site in the show notes. Thanks for following us, Ben. So I guess to conclude, that is ContraCast episode 3. At this point, I don't know how long it's gone. I don't know how boring it is. But as far as we know, next week we'll have two or maybe even three people back on the show. John and Steven should be joining us again, and we might call in someone else depending on what we're talking about. So if there's anything you want us to talk about, we'd love to
hear from you.
What's the word? Yeah, hear from you.
We need some feedback to tell us what you like.
That's the magic word. It's feedback. Because so far I've only really gotten one or two comments, and they're like, "Hey, nice show." So that's cool and all, but I guess we'll continue churning out garbage until we hear something that gives us a little bit of a
constructive
guidance.
Criticism.
Yeah, constructive criticism would be fantastic. So, I guess with that, everyone have a great week. I hope 4th was good for everyone. I know it was here. And we'll probably have another episode up next week. Enjoy yourselves and stay safe.